It's the same old story. It's been a long day at the job, or maybe it's just starting to feel long, and you feel that urge to stretch your legs and get a little bit of a break. You walk down the street, or maybe you get behind the wheel of your car, and you feel the weight begin to lift. You walk through the doors, and the sound of the place starts to clear the air. You get a table, you order your drink, you listen to the sounds of the bar, and soak in the conversation. Welcome to the T&E Speakeasy, with your hosts, Caleb and Isaac. Listen in as they discuss a variety of topics, such as the coming Marvel retrospective, video game remasters, and rock and roll high school. Hey, maybe those could be the movies that open that door.
No, because same thing with Disney stuff. I don't know if they're like, if they would be able to analyze it, you know, like, but again, maybe it's just that analysis. Film analysis is not up their alley, nor like what they would think about on a regular basis.
And that's why when we first met working that job, and you know, you would always try to make conversation. I would always just be like, oh man, this fucking guy, I just want to listen to podcasts. Like, and then at some point I realized like, oh wait, I've never once met someone who experienced art the similar way that I do. And eventually once I realized, I was like, oh fuck, like this is a giant surprise. Because I never really thought I would meet someone like that. I was like, oh, those are just people that you encounter on the internet.
I mean, we're kind of doing that right now as well for people listening.
That's true. So, I think it's a rare thing.
Oh, you're darn right. Like, not only that, bud, but like, I don't know if I was like analytical though, to be honest with you. Like, I think I was one of those people who was just in the dark. Or like, because I never, maybe it wasn't, I didn't have, maybe there wasn't a awakening moment for me, but like, or maybe it's just because I was watching a bunch of, you know, the Stellar Critic or those other guys who were reviewing anything, whether it's movies, video games, books, comic books, what have you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all on our different paths. And yeah, maybe when we met, you were, I mean, you definitely wanted to dive deep into certain, especially Star Trek or Star Wars, I mean. But yeah, maybe a different level of deep than you would now.
Oh.
And probably the same for me. I don't really remember at this point where I was back then. That was so long ago.
It's almost 10 years, bud. It's almost been 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we could look at our two early reviews from 2016 and yeah, our that's some surface stuff, I think.
But that's the thing, what I said before is that we are not the same we were then, and we're not going to be the same in 6 years.
Yeah. No, that's certainly fair.
Which is kind of exciting. Like, literally, I'm either going to expand my knowledge and repertoire, or I'm going to degrade.
Probably expand. Probably
hopefully. Expand. I'm just like, at this point, okay, like, listen, the biggest thing that I'm excited, okay, there's a few things that I'm excited for. I'm excited for episode 4, because it's kind of obvious. I'm making a big deal out of it. It's not. It's just a movie.
No, it's a big deal.
But still, it's for you and I, it's a freaking big deal. And I'm also excited for that Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. That I'm also really excited for. But the one thing that I'm actually intrigued at, and like, okay, there actually is some, like, what am I going to do? Is the Marvel retrospective.
Oh, boy. I've been thinking about that a lot.
I mean, we have fucking 4 years. I mean, it's not going to be 4 years at this point, but we have a whole freaking year of 2027, not devoted to Marvel specifically, but like every film that has Marvel in the title, or Marvel has, you know, created in a way, is going to be in there. And I'm just like, fucking A, Road to Endgame. That's pretty much what it's called, Road to Endgame. Fuck.
Yeah, my current plans right now, I don't know if you'll agree, is 2025 is the beginning, and chronological order. Well, I that's what I keep not being able to decide. Is it chronological, or is it series wise? Like, do we go in order of movies being released, or do we pick series and then jump back if it was, like, for instance, I want to do the TV movies. Will we wait until we get to Doctor Strange before we did the Doctor Strange TV movie? I'm not sure.
See, I don't have a problem with doing the TV movies now, because I obviously want to do Spider-Man. Like that,
yeah.
Like that, the Trial of the Incredible Hulk, Doctor... I would, Man-Thing, I don't have a problem, or wait, was that a TV series or just like TV movie?
I believe it was direct-to-video release.
Okay. Like those ones I wouldn't mind doing now, or at least, you know, in the immediate future. Maybe again, I'm wrong, this is why we're talking right now about this, but like, maybe this is a bit too much. Here's me going with Star Wars again. Maybe it is probably smart restart in 2025. I said 2027. I'm like, okay, we could probably get like, you know, what is it, 50 movies done by like 2028?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, maybe that's ignorance and oversimplifying things and believing, especially knowing myself when it comes to this stuff. It's like, maybe it is smart that we we start in 2025.
Yeah, I figured for the volume of movies there to avoid burnout, give it 3 years.
Yeah, okay, no, and you're spreading it out as well. It's just like,
yeah,
I don't know if it would be too, okay, yeah, no. I tried to get 9 films into Star Wars before Rise of Skywalker. Look how well that was.
Yeah, and as someone who did run through them in a very short succession, I think I did them all in, I don't know, maybe a year and a half. Oh boy, was I burnt out. I was so done by the time I got to the end of that retrospective.
Yeah, okay.
Because even though you're biased against the MCU, oh boy, the depths of terrible before we get to the MCU when it comes to the Marvel films. Oh man, it's hard not to be burnt out.
At least, you know, obviously up until Winter Soldier. Even Avengers, like, fucking, I was all in until, like, Guardians, and then...
Oh, man.
Post-Civil War, and then, yeah.
Oh, even Iron Man. Iron Man was like a giant breath of fresh air after... Because I did do them basically in chronological order when I was going through my retrospective. So it took a long time to finally get to Iron Man, and it was like, oh, thank God, something good. Because before then, it was very... very spread out, the ones that were worth watching.
I mean, I am all for chronological, but I don't know how we would do the other... Like, what would be the other way? Backwards? No, it's Road to Endgame. That's the whole point.
The other way would be doing, like, select series. Like, we would do, okay, we're going to start with... what was the first official Marvel movie? That'd be Howard the Duck. So we kind of go that way and yeah, just go along what will be the established series. Like, we wouldn't do something like Generation X until we got along to the X-Men series, that kind of thing.
Because it would be out of place, right?
Yeah, or we could just do chronological release. We start with the Captain Americas and go up, you know, whatever sequence of release. We wouldn't necessarily do all the sequels of one series together. There could be another method, too. Maybe those were just the two I was thinking of. I'm not sure.
You mean the Marvel method? I mean, like, maybe I'm just too, like, black and white and just close-minded, but it's like, unfortunately with the MCU, that, like, that's an ongoing story.
Those ones we would do in sequence. Yeah, the MCU is separate.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah, the MCU's, well, yeah, no, that's tough.
This is hard, because, okay, I don't want to obviously do the standard thing of, like, chronological order, but it's like for me it's actually a cool idea, because it at least like gets let's just like kind of like Fast and Furious, how we saw that, you know, that series devolve into absurdity and stupidity.
Yep.
It shows where these films and these characters started from under different, you know, studios and directors, and then like the highs and lows between each of them. But obviously I see the point of like, okay, so that means that we're going to like pause MCU during 2014 between the releases of Captain Winter Soldier and Guardians of the Galaxy, and then insert Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Days of Future Past.
No, yeah.
Do we also then do from Days of Future Past, do we have to do Days of Future Past?
The Rogue Cut?
Yeah, like the regular cut or then the Rogue Cut?
I think you just sold me on doing it series by series, because while you're talking, I was thinking, oh man, it'd be a quite a long gap between Spider-Man, the first Sam Raimi one, and then Spider-Man 3, and then even longer to Amazing Spider-Man. Maybe, yeah, doing it series by series so we can kind of more closely examine the stories. Maybe it'd be the better way to go.
Yeah, okay, we're going with that. But I'm still saying the MCU has to be, like, all in order.
Yes. Yeah, save that for the end. Do everything up to before the MCU and then get to that.
This I can accept. Does this also mean we have to do Daredevil theatrical cut and then director's cut?
We could just discuss them both in the same podcast.
That's totally fair. That's perfectly fine. And hey, maybe that'll be the year we can finally get Cap on here.
Oh, maybe. But I definitely want to start with Howard the Duck, I think.
Just send out a invoice to him or an email being like, hey, Cap, you want to do a commentary on Daredevil on a different channel?
Yeah, maybe. I didn't remember, yeah. It wasn't until we were in the movie theater and they played a little thing for it. And I was like, really? Oh. I was like, isn't that next week? But no.
Nine. It was several hours ago. And today, I suppose. Yeah, not a fan, I suppose. Or at least not into it.
Yeah, I just don't care. I don't care about any holidays, really. I just, people care about it. It just, I barely even am aware that it's happening. And I used to care more when I was a teenager because there were some people in my life who were kind of harassy about, oh, you need to be wearing a poppy. What are you doing? You got to support, the people who founded our country.
What?
And I would just get annoyed at the harassment. It's like, just leave me alone. You can wear a poppy if you want. That's great. Why do I have to buy one?
Wait, we have what? They founded our... What is that supposed to mean? Isn't that on Canada Day?
the people who keep us free, you know?
Well, that's fair.
It's like, okay, well, like, whatever. That, if you care, then that's great. I personally just not interested in that. So.
Well, how about I ask you this? Like, is there any way of showing appreciation for those who are at least... like keeping them, well, I guess that's politicians. What am I saying here? And I guess same with the army.
Yeah, I feel like it's endless appreciation, really.
Yeah, endless appreciation all the time.
So why does my voice need to be added to the choir?
Well, I make a good point there.
But it's not so much picking on Remembrance Day in particular. I don't pay attention really to any of the holidays. So it's just one of the ones that I feel like people give me more pressure to participate. And so that would make me more annoyed. Same with Christmas when I was a kid.
Even though I volunteered you to be the holiday killer in the Long Halloween adaptation, you also would not be a suspect in real life of being a holiday killer.
No, I would just be the one who just wouldn't even remember that it's happening.
And if we're dealing with, like, if we write the Batman as, like, an insane person, he would be like, exactly, that's why you're the holiday killer. Because somebody who doesn't care about holidays and is, like, apathetic towards them is the person who would go out and kill people on holidays.
Yeah, him and his wacky ideals. Sick old Batman.
Yeah.
I started, by the way, playing Return to Arkham, the Arkham Asylum edition. Because I realized that, for whatever reason, my old game, which I was kind of pissed about, no longer is acceptable for the Xbox One. They won't they don't have it in their Play Store, I guess, so they wouldn't allow me to download it onto there. So I had to buy the remakes in order to be able to play it.
And that's why I am enjoying that's why I enjoy still physical media in a way, because I still have my PS3 edition, or I guess PS3 copy.
Yeah, and I did consider playing it on my Xbox 360 because I still have that as well. And it had like some, it was like a Walmart exclusive, so it came with exclusive, costuming or something. But I was like, they just recently put them all on sale for, I don't know, like $15 for all three of them. Ask her, I'll just get that. So it would end up working out, but I was annoyed momentarily.
Understandable. What do you think so far of the game?
I love how it looks. I think the remaster looks great, but it always looked great. I quite like the combat. And the setting is, of course, great as well. Great sense of mood. I like all the little jokes that they have hidden around and the little, like the interviews, the patient interviews, those are all fun. I'm probably like maybe 4 hours into it in terms of the plot, maybe 3.5. And I'm still waiting to really get pulled into the story. I'm not quite there yet. But the overall world and the gameplay is all fun.
I gotta say, this may be controversial, I think I prefer the original graphics of the PS3 and Xbox 360 editions. Some reason Batman's face looks slightly better. I remember there was a there's plenty of comparison videos out there showing, like, you know, the differentiations between each edition and the graphic enhancements, and I honestly think at least like the 8th or 7th generation of consoles look better
for that game in particular, or overall.
I'd say, yeah, for Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that could be. Was Arkham Asylum one of the ones, because I remember there was a lot of games for the Xbox 360 that had like a like overly glowy quality to the animation. It was like I don't know, like there was like a, like they smeared Vaseline over it, so all the colors kind of bled out, and or the light source, I mean. Do you know what I'm talking about at all, George, or do I sound crazy?
Give me some examples. How about that? Because I know you're saying, like, you're giving general descriptions, but I need some examples.
The first one that comes to mind is Dark Sector, if you ever played that.
Which I did not.
Okay, let me quickly take a look at some of my discs here. They're currently covered up. I'll just move what's covering them. Okay, I took a brief look at some of them. I remember that Stranglehold definitely had some of that going on in there as well.
Yep, played that one.
I'm trying to think of some other ones. It's tough to say now that I'm thinking about it, because maybe this was just to do with the poor quality, like the SD quality of a lot of those games. Because I was thinking of the early Tomb Raider remake games, Anniversary and Legend. I feel like both of them had that glowy quality as well. And maybe Underworld. But yeah, maybe those other ones you didn't play, so I'm not sure about examples that... that you might have done.
I've seen gameplay of, I think, Underworld, but I wonder if it was just like the tech at the time. I don't know if you played Force Unleashed.
Yeah.
I guess I could sort of see what you mean by that. I think of it more as like maybe a plasticky look to some of the characters.
Yeah, I think I'm more fixating on like the light and the sheen of, and like when things are like watery, I feel like the glowiness would come out more. Like if it was meant to be like, oh, like the ground, it just rained, and so you're walking on ground that's wet, and you'd have this kind of glowy sheen over it or something.
Can you remember back to the CODs at the time? If you were playing Call of Duty by that point?
What's weird is I was playing a lot of them, but I don't really remember them. I don't remember the games much. I even went back and tried to play Modern Warfare 2, because I still have 2 and 3 on my disc, and they play in my Xbox. But I don't know, like maybe 20 minutes in, I was just like, eh, I'm bored. I don't really like the clunky gameplay. I'm abandoning this. So I didn't get far enough to see.
Also, just for those confused, Modern Warfare 2009. I cannot believe we're doing this.
Was it 2009? Oh, I guess that was the first one.
Well, because there was Modern Warfare 2 last year.
Yeah, I think that one came out in 2011, I think. Because I think it went... 10 was Call of Duty Black Ops, the first one. Then I think it went Modern Warfare 2. And I think 3 was like 2013 or something like that.
No, it goes... 2009 is Modern Warfare 2. 2010 is Black Ops. 2011 is Modern Warfare 3. 2013 is the game everybody forgets, Ghosts.
Yeah, Ghosts was okay. I liked that game.
Heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, those in between and affiliated. Probably the only person on planet Earth who liked, or was okay with Ghosts.
Yeah, I remember liking it. I don't remember loving Modern Warfare 3. I don't think I ever finished that game. I think I got bored with it as well.
Well, if you, you know, feel fizzled out from 2011's version, they just released Modern Warfare 3, 2023. Why are we doing this? Why are... There's a rant. Call your game something else. Like, stop calling it. Like, because it's... I feel like those aren't remakes. I feel like those... Well, I guess they are remakes. They're retellings, almost. Like, they take the same characters from those first three games. Or, yeah, I guess collection of the first three games. And then they, like, just bring the characters to, like, a new setting. And are, like, modern day, air quotes. Just call them something else.
Oh, so it's not actually, it's not taking the campaign and redoing it, just updating the graphics and gameplay?
Well, I mean, at the end of Modern Warfare 2 2022's campaign, there's an after credit sequence where one of the characters has a text message and says no Russian.
Oh.
I don't, are you familiar with that, are you familiar with that reference?
I played the game back when it came out. But no, I don't. I can't remember.
It's, I don't know if it's been a hot topic debate for a while, but it was at the time also kind of like controversial of either four Russians, either terrorists or just like undercover agents or something like that. You enter into a airport and you start shooting civilians.
Okay. Yes. I very much do remember that. Yeah.
And one of the guys says to your player character, no Russian.
Yeah, no, I remember playing that and being like, whoa, like this feels like a terrorist attack. This is fucked up. I remember at the time being like, I don't know about this move. This seems really tasteless.
I mean, wasn't it this in Modern Warfare 1, so 2007, when they launched or they detonated a nuke at the end?
That I don't know. I never played that one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Modern Warfare 2 is the first COD game that I played.
Okay. Maybe they are just taking the story nowadays, or maybe they're taking the stories from back then and reapplying it to modern day stuff, but with new hardware and graphics. But geez, like, I mean, maybe it is a different, maybe it's just a spiritual successor to it. But maybe it's like Suspiria, I suppose. Maybe I should be like okay of that. And Suspiria, well, maybe what I have a problem with is that, you know, Suspiria was released in 1977, and then, you know, Luca Guadagnino's Suspiria was released in 2019, so there's quite a gap of time between both movies and both projects, so, you know, you can accept it, and they are certainly both like very different stylistically between one another, which is great because it differentiates the two, and you can, like we said in our reviews, you can go watch either one. Sure, the 2019 one might be superior to the 77 one, but I think the 77 one has merits to it, visually speaking, if it's not really, you know, well thought out in the story department. But the fact that it's been 12 years, I guess, or 13 years since the release of, you know, Modern Warfare 1, 2, and 3, and then they're basically remaking them. That seems a little too soon, almost. Maybe I'm just wrong on that. I mean, I could say the same thing, I would guess, about, like, Dead Space, and they just did that as well, where the first one was released in 2008. Remember when that second game came out, and it was kind of, like, around for that era, and then now they're just like, oh, we're going to remake the series, and or remake the first one. It's like, really? We're really going to do that? Like, okay. I guess Resident Evil as well.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, maybe, I mean, I tried to play Modern Warfare 2. I didn't actually even realize that they did remake that. But it felt, after playing, what was that one from 2014?
Advanced Warfare.
After playing Advanced Warfare, I tried to play that campaign maybe a week or so after finishing that one. And it felt so clunky, so slow. And I was kind of like, you know, this, it's taking some adjustment here. So in terms of, I feel like gameplay mechanics evolved so much since that time period, that maybe just makes sense to remake them and try to catch them up with the new machines. And even something like the Xbox One, when you play a 360 game on it, it's still using some form of emulation. I don't know if they can ever really get it to be quite right if it's being emulated. I've noticed with some of the games, I've tried to play them on my 360 versus the Xbox One, and I find they feel a lot smoother back on the 360 again, even though it looks much worse. There's just something there that's not like 100%. It's like 99.1% there, if that makes sense.
Weird that it's their own hardware and they can't... Well, okay, I obviously don't understand hardware and engineering in that sense, or software engineer, but it is weird that they can't backwards play their own games. It's quite interesting to me.
Yeah, they have to like almost downgrade themselves a little bit to play the old stuff. Something in there like switches on, like, okay, remove these little bits and yeah, try to just go back to whatever the natural form of this tech was. It's even more clunky with the Xbox Zero, or whatever you call it, the original Xbox games. Even more clunky.
That's true, and I mean, I guess Halo Combat Evolved the Dead as well, where they had a remaster in 2012. That's right, 2012. 12 years after Halo Combat Evolved came out. Or was it 2001? Yep. I don't remember. So they did that, and they had the option where you could actually switch back to the graphics. That was a cool setting. That's a really cool setting that I kind of wish Dead Space and... Well, no, because Dead Space is just so... like both Dead Space and then Resident Evil, I guess the remakes... are so fundamental. Could you just imagine you have a button that you can dedicate a button that you can switch back to like Resident Evil 2's graphics and tank controls.
Oh my goodness. That'd be crazy.
Just all of a sudden you're being chased by Mr. X, and then all of a sudden you hit a button and it switches to tank controls and you know static camera or whatever it is, and now, that'd be definitely something. I'd love to play that kind of game.
Yeah, and I guess Tomb Raider did it 10 years later, because the first game came out in, I can't remember if it was 96 or, no, I think it was 97. And then they put out Tomb Raider Anniversary, I think it was 10 years after. And it's like night and day, the difference between the two games. Now, of course, yeah, one was in the 90s, much more primitive tech. But even just that 10 years, it had become so outdated. No, I still love it. I'm totally fine to go back and play the clunkiness of those games. I guess I am playing on a PS2, so that helps. But yeah, just the massive, like the quantum leap from that period 10 years later, it's just crazy. And you can't imagine playing it at that point. You gotta update it versus that kind of, I guess it would have been actually the PS2, I think. I don't know. Now I'm getting confused. Maybe I'll look this up.
Well, to answer your question, though, back to all the way to Batman Arkham Asylum, I think maybe it's nostalgia, or maybe I just accept it. I do like that late aughts, early new tens look that video games had in the late generation, seventh generation consoles. I don't know, maybe it's just because that was when I was starting to, as a teenager, getting into mainstream video games on those consoles. And or home console, excuse me. So I was, I guess I'm just more familiar, and or at least I can accept, you know, the look of them, and almost in a way, how do I put this? Not lament, but definitely long for those images to come back. Almost the simplicity of them, like retroactively speaking. Obviously, you're right. They are clunky. No doubt about that, but. I sort of miss that, and you know, world's tiniest violin, first world problems, but I kind of don't like the photorealism angle that we've been taking, and you know how effects heavy. That's always the thing about games, but
yeah.
You know how all the particle effects and all, like, you know, us touting, we have to look at how great our games look graphically, and. You know, you look back on those games, and some people laud them for, you know, how well they were made. I mean, that's the same thing way back in the 90s and 2000s as well. So maybe, pardon me if I'm just lamenting that graphics have taken over hardcore gameplay, but not that gameplay doesn't exist nowadays, because it definitely does, and again, indie titles exist. And even AAA ones have that as well, but it's like, man. And the fact that, well, for us, games weren't that expensive. Well, I'm not gonna say not expensive, but you know, you pay at least up here, you pay $59 for a game, and there was replay value to it sometimes. At least I found there was replay value to them.
Yeah, the games that I loved, I would play over and over again.
I mean, maybe that's not true. Obviously, like doesn't matter what era it is, you can always replay a game. That's pardon me for saying that, but I was a different time. I mean, obviously. You know, the big selling points, the big problems back then for gaming was, oh, let's do motion controls. And, oh, every single, like, it was a point where, like, oh, single player games aren't going to be able to sustain themselves unless you're playing a JRPG. So we're going to, you know, tack on some multiplayer onto it. And it's just a bare bones, didn't even need to have it. Like, they brought in a different group, entirely a different company to make the multiplayer of it. It's like, and just, trying to, even back then there was problems with the games, but I don't know, just different time.
You're just describing BioShock 2. Yeah. Kind of a bare bones, much shorter campaign, a lot of the same gameplay, and they wanted to revive it by throwing in this, I wouldn't say hackneyed, but definitely and not hugely stand out multiplayer, and they're pushing that a lot. And a lot of people felt like, oh, you guys didn't put as much attention to the plot. You just focused more on this whole online multiplayer thing, and fuck that. But there were fans who loved it. Maybe I came in too late.
Probably. Do you think, I don't even really know about, like, everyone knows about Bioshock 1, but not a lot of people talk about Bioshock 2.
That was a cool game. It was definitely nowhere near as good than the first or the third. It was just more of like a, what do you call it? It was almost like an expansion pack on the first game. But it had its own unique gameplay mechanics and some really cool new pieces of the mechanics. Not wholly new, but I feel like they gave us some cool variations. I quite like that game still.
Speaking of Bioshock Infinite, I'm still waiting for Bioshock 3.
I think it's coming. They claim it's coming.
Is it actually going to be called Bioshock 3, by the way?
I don't believe it has a title yet.
See, the joke there is like, well, it's Bioshock Infinite. What about 3? Because we skipped over, like, if Infinite's the last game, because, you know, like, from there, there's negative infinity and there's, like, positive infinity. Well, then where's Bioshock 3?
Yeah. No, that's fair. Again, if they call it 4, they might come up with another name for it.
Yeah, of course.
I'm more curious if that Bioshock movie's going to come out before the next game does. I'm very curious what's going to happen there.
What do you want to see from that exactly? I mean, I'm even curious about, like, what is, I mean, the aesthetic is probably the selling point as well, but, you know, we've been seeing movies recently, or video game movies, and it's tough to translate them because the big obviously problem is that you're taking what could be like a 9 or 20 hour game and condensing it down into like 130 minutes, or maybe 130 minutes, but like an hour, 30 minute movie.
Yep, and most of them are action based. So even something like Bioshock, which could use, like, if you're going to turn it into a big blockbuster, you probably need 3 hours to tell a story for that. I mean, I could see them needing close to that, but there's no way the studio would green like that. It'd be like, untested property based on a video game. People just want action, not a 3 hour long contemplative story. Because, of course, I'm sure the studio execs wouldn't understand. They probably wouldn't play it, and they would just be thinking about dollar signs coming their way.
It's always been that way. I wouldn't even say, like, oh, it's nowadays, but, like, that's been ever since, you know, movies and entertainment were first realized to, you know, be another marketing tactic of getting money. It's like, it's always been that way, but...
And video games in particular. It's one of the worst veins for films of just studio execs not understanding the properties or caring. And just pumping out whatever crap they think is going to earn them a couple bucks and be an advertisement for a game as well. So, ugh.
Well, I would suggest abandon the Bioshock film and instead do what Last of Us did and, you know, do it on TV. That was well regarded. That was, like, highly critical. People love that series. Everybody was talking about it. Even my sibling, who's never played the game before, was, you know, in on it. They were like, oh, this is amazing. So, yeah, do a television story. Or television series, excuse me. Because movie's not going to work.
I agree with you there. The only thing is, I feel like it needs the budget for a big movie in order to realize, because The Last of Us, you know, takes place in just like the regular world.
Yep.
It's not in this super detailed kind of sci-fi setting. And I mean, I guess I'd accept a cheaper looking project if they give us a good story, or at least keep true to the story rather than the big budget expense. But either, I don't have any interest in Bioshock. I'm happy to play the games over. I don't need a film or TV version. But if they're gonna make it, I would prefer TV.
You would you need a soundstage, or I guess nowadays a volume stage, to realize the Art Deco of Rapture. And yeah, I could definitely. That's probably the only way you could do it, really. Especially, I think you only could do sound stages because there's rarely like not. There's absolutely no flashbacks or whatever's to the surface world. It's only ever inside Rapture the entire time, eh?
You see the lead character's like little office. Every now and again, we'll just see him like in like a drunken daze in there. Or at least that's what it seems like. But you could easily just shoot that and like, oh, just put him in a closet, you know? So yeah, you wouldn't really need the real world.
Well, I definitely know of games to, I gotta make that list at some point, the video games to review, like an actual, like, you know, what we said we're gonna do it at some point.
Oh shit, yeah, we talked about doing that Tomb Raider. Yeah, I forgot about that. Survivor's Born, right?
Yep.
Damn.
Did I send you that video about biopics?
I don't think so.
Okay. It's more or less like that whole argument I had before about like a biopic being like a good one being telling a story, even if it is like making things up,
mm-hmm.
over like greatest hits.
Oh, by the way, I did watch that movie that we discussed, that Whitney Houston one.
Ah, I Want to Dance with Somebody. What'd you think?
Brianna liked it less than I did. She actually is the one that always brings out these musical biopics.
Okay.
And she generally likes them. This one, she was like, wow, that one felt like they just read a Wikipedia entry and just filmed it.
She knows what I mean.
Yeah, so she was pissed. I was like, I feel the same way, but I could enjoy some of the musical sequences and the acting. You know, it gets just the barest of passes, but it definitely felt, yeah, like it was just the most bare bones. Like, I could have read an article about her life and gotten just as much than watching that 2.5 hour long movie.
Yeah, don't worry, I'm not gonna like prod you or anything like that. But hey, see my point now? So like, yeah, definitely. I mean, it gets a pass. It's not like a badly made film, but like, yeah, but you're seeing what I mean. You saw what I mean, right? Like, there is the makings of like a real, like, okay, I don't want to sensationalize her entire life and, you know, say, but like, this could be an Oscar worthy performance, and or not a performance, but this could have been an Oscar worthy movie if they had gone in that direction. Really, the whole, like, you know, the American tragedy of like, you know, starting from nothing, going to the top, and then like, you know, falling.
Yeah.
I don't know how her estate would have liked that if that was that kind of movie, and then like it got the Oscar. It's just like, great, you're celebrating our dead relative by way of tragedy. Great.
Yeah, that would be tough for them, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. But hey, again, it's like, that'd make for a compelling story.
Did you see Rocket Man?
I never did. I know it was kind of, I'm not gonna say it was like, you know, they made, I always get this, is it Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they make Bohemian Rhapsody, so it's just like, oh, I guess they'll probably do something similar, right? And then out comes Rocket Man.
Yeah, and I was commenting to Brianna, I think the reason why Rocket Man stands out so much compared to those other ones is it was a story told from a perspective. It opens up, I don't think this is spoilers since we see in the first few minutes, it opens up with Elton John stumbling into a rehab and him going to like the share circle, and he starts singing his story of telling what his life was. And so the whole movie is framed from him telling his story and trying to open up. And I feel like giving it a perspective like that keeps it from just feeling like we're getting cliff notes, because it feels like someone, you know, trying to share something, versus just, yeah, that movie really did just feel like I almost never really got into Whitney's head. It was just kind of just seeing snapshots of her life. So I think Rocket Man was a solid attempt at that kind of thing.
I think it also helps the fact that I assume that Sir Elton John was a producer on that.
I don't know. It's a good point.
Oh, interesting. Well, I mean, hopefully. Again, it also helps the fact that he's still alive, so.
And it helps that Taron Egerton as well is just a great actor. And his versions of the songs, oh, he nailed them. He was just awesome in that movie in general, but his songs were really good as well.
So I've heard, and I believe you on that. So, Caleb, what did you think of the film that you showed me the other week, Roger Corman's Rock and Roll High School?
Well, as I was recommending it, I definitely think that movie's a lot of fun. For a kind of a cheaper musical, I feel like it's like half musical, half just a movie with musical performances in it. And I think in that regard, I think it doesn't really stand out too great, but I think it's got such a fun vibe overall. And Rock and Roll High School, the song, I think, is a fun piece of work, too. So that kind of helps it stand out.
I agree. This is a... how do I put this? This is like, I guess, in cooperation with the Ramones themselves, it's kind of a... How do I put this? Just like a spotlight and or promoting their albums.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is hilarious. By way of having a plot similar to Animal House, but a lot more intelligent.
Yeah, and less grody sex comedy stuff. I mean, there is some sex comedy stuff, but it feels more childish, and which I feel like makes it... It has like more of an innocent quality to it, which makes it feel more silly and less ugly.
Would you say this is a farce?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is a well thought out farce. Let's be real here. Like, this is a well smart, like, this is a, like, a, how would I put this? This is smart, similar to like Blues Brothers, where there's a lot of like nonsensical elements, but they don't make you feel bad. I mean, sure, they blow up the school in the end, but I didn't find it like, you know, well, I guess you could look at it as anti-authoritative, but like,
yeah,
I thought I bought it. I was like, no, this is kind of just for what it is. It's just a load of fun. Like, it's not, I don't think it's going to harm anybody's like brain. I mean, it's obviously Corman piece. I definitely am feeling it and enjoying it. How did you come across this film, sir?
Oh, I'd heard about it for many years. Written by Joe Dante. I've been very slowly trying to make my way through all of his work, and yeah, I'll pretty much check out anything by Roger Corman, and they happened to be playing it on TCM one day, and I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I definitely want to watch that. So I PVR'd it and had a grand old time.
Excellent, yeah. Was that your first time watching it or the second time?
With you guys was the second time, but when I caught it on TCM, it was the first. So that was maybe like, I don't know, like 3 or 4 months ago, something like that.
Yeah, I don't think you'd probably want to do a an actual like discussion of it. It was just a like, you know, a quick movie to watch, and it was a fun time.
Yeah, I don't know if there'd be too much to say for a full episode, but yeah, I figured it'd be fun to show you. Yeah.
Well, I definitely was enjoying it. I don't know how I would be able to get it. I don't know if like how who distributes Roger Corman's movies, and if they are distributed all on a streaming service or by way of home video.
Oh, I'm relatively sure that it's on Tubi. Most Roger Corman stuff ends up there at some point or another, even if it's only there for like 6 months. So,
you know, something that man's work will never like be erased from existence, I find. I think, other than like the Fantastic Four movie, I think almost all his movies will probably show up somewhere in some capacity.
Yep, yep. He's always a good businessman, and distributing, that was a big part of his gig there. So he's definitely still holding true to that all these years later.
Yeah, I got to tip my hat to him for, you know, the stuff he's accomplished, because it is no small feat the way he's done things, and his business beliefs and intelligence there. I gotta give my hat, tip the hat to him on that one.
Yeah, and one day I would love to do a Corman series, just highlighting some of the standout ones. We definitely still got to do Chopping Mall. That falls under his, I think it was Empire Pictures period, I think, when that came out. Or Concord. and yeah, I would like to do his Post-Cycle as well, if you know much about that.
I don't know what that is, unless you can describe it to me.
They came out during the early to mid-60s, and they were directed by Roger Corman. It wasn't just him producing. They were, yeah, kind of his more prestige efforts. And he was adapting some of the more famous Edgar Allan Poe stories. So we had Fall of the House of Usher. We had The Raven. I'm trying to remember. I've got them all on disc. And a number of them feature some of the more famous names of the day. Peter Lorre and Vincent Price make their appearances. And yeah, there's some really cool movies there. And it's really shows that he had a good eye as a director, as well as just a producer of cheaper B-movies. When he had the right material, he could really bring out some different skills that we don't usually see from him. So,
yeah, that's wonderful. We'll definitely do that in the future. I'm not saying, like, coming next week. No, certainly.
Yes.
No. In the future. Put a pin in that for a series later on.
Yeah, maybe a Halloween one year. Well, because I think it's 6 films, and only I think 5 of them are readily available. One of them I remember I had a really hard time tracking down, so.
I see. Anything else you'd like to mention about Rock and Roll High School?
Oh, I'm always... Clint Howard, I've seen him many, many times over the years. Kind of like a Dick Miller who just shows up in B-movies. And seeing Rock and Roll High School and seeing him have a chance to lead and not be terrible. Because I have seen a couple movies where he was more the central character and he was just terrible. Evil Speak being one of them. High don't recommend on Evil Speak. But to see him getting more of a central role in this movie, I think he shows a lot of charm that is not often featured for him. So that's always a highlight, I think.
Now, is it because in those roles where he, you know, wasn't the best at or didn't act it properly, is it because he... Is it him or was it the scripts or the direction?
I'm sure it's all of the above. And I'm sure at a certain point he doesn't care. He's just showing up for a paycheck on a B-movie, and he's got some name, so they'll, you know, throw money at him to do cameos. And I've just seen endless movies with him showing up. We covered one of them, or I guess a couple of them, I think, at this point. Maybe just two, actually, with Solo and House of the Dead. But yeah, I think I mentioned in our Soul discussion, Leprechaun 2 he shows up in, and... Yeah, just so much stuff. This movie called The Wraith, he shows up in a really silly role too. Yeah, he's all over the place. And most of the time I'm happy to see him, even though he shows up and acts badly. I'm just like, okay, I'm still, just for whatever reason, I just enjoy the guy. So,
Is he like Nicolas Cage, where he wants to avoid anything to do with Francis Ford Coppola, and so Howard tries to avoid Ron and his work?
No, he always shows up just as a cameo for his brother there.
Okay.
And of course, Francis Ford Coppola, there's another person who started with Roger Corman.
Oh, were they buds at one point, or?
Kicked off his career. No, Roger Corman was one of the first people to hire him as a director for a couple of his B-movies.
Wow, that's I wonder if Lucas knows him at all, or if interacted with him at all in some capacity.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
I mean, that's a good point. Like, who hasn't been, like, a series of, like, who was influenced by Corman? And so we, like, do all his, like, you know, the Corman pieces. So, like, you know, whatever James Cameron did with Corman, but that's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah. Yeah, because, yeah, he did a lot of random stuff. Yeah.
What are we going to just, like, do? Because he did, like, the paintings for some background?
Yeah.
That's enough to get it on the list of like movies we're watching. It's just like, why are we watching this exactly? It's just because, like, you know, Steven Spielberg was involved in this one, James Cameron's involved in this one, and Brian De Palma was involved with this one over here.
Yeah, we probably don't need to do that, but I would like to throw out a handful of them. Maybe I just start throwing them in randomly. If we're going to do less series for a little while, we could just go back to our old routine of us picking a movie each. God, we haven't done that in forever.
Haven't done that in a while.
Yeah. We could do a string of it. Just like, we both get three picks, and then we jump into a series after that.
I guess we can restart that now. I'll go first instead. Usually I'm the one that makes you go first, but this time I'll go first.
Yeah, sure. I think that'd be fun. Yeah.
Funny that we're not exactly like... I'm not saying... Well, okay. I don't mind the Ramones. I just, obviously, I think Blitzkrieg Bop is, you know, completely overplayed. But they only did that, like, once or twice in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've always known about the Ramones, you know, it's just a band that exists, but I never listened to their albums or really knew what songs were theirs. They're just a piece of pop culture. So it's getting more of an exposure to them in this movie. I think it's nice that they had such a fun sense of humor about it. That they'd show up, you know, they acted, you know, as much as you'd expect from non-actors who are just there for fun. But I think that them being a part of the movie did bring a certain element of charm to it. And I love the PJ Souls from Halloween. I love her just obsession with the Ramones and her dreaming about them. And yeah, I think all that stuff's really funny.
For those who don't know who you're talking about, I know who you're talking about, but like for those who don't know, the actor was in Halloween. What character did she play?
She played the one whose boobs that we see. I don't remember that character's name, but
if I recall, she was her and her boyfriend were about to have intercourse, and he goes downstairs to either make a sandwich or I think a Terminator.
Yeah.
But he goes downstairs, and then Michael, like, you know, stabs him and hangs him from, like, was it from a door or something like that? And then he comes in with a white sheet over his head.
Yeah.
With glasses on.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah. And yeah, she's playing a character named Riff, and I think she's just a lot of fun. She's kind of the main star.
In this movie, sorry. In this film.
Oh, by the way, in this movie, there was a reporter called Screamin' Steve.
Screamin' Steve. I remember him.
Yes, and Joe Dante, he showed up in a couple of Roger Corman movies. I think one other one, he played another kind of a newscaster or radio personality. And he shows up in Gremlins in a cameo role. We don't actually see his face, but we hear his voice in the radio. And he's playing Rockin' Ricky Rialto. And it's basically reprising the same character, and there's a really fun little subplot running through Gremlins with Rockin' Ricky. So when I saw Rock and Roll High School and I heard the guy's voice, I was like, hey, that sounds like Rockin' Ricky. Is this the same guy? And I thought that was a fun little callback that Joe Dante brought out. But yeah, that's about it. That's about all I got for Rock and Roll High School.
Yeah, I'd recommend it, but I guess how would people watch this film, sir?
I did look it up. It is on Tubi currently. So, yeah, check it out if you have like an hour and 40 minutes or whatever it was.
Yeah, I definitely give it a recommendation feeling it. So, yeah, go watch for yourself and enjoy the film and the songs with it.